Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Forgive my voice today. I have a little bit of a cold, so not as good
or anything, but I just want to make sure it's really me on the line. Today I want to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about education, because that's one of the most important things that holds us together as a society, allows us to pass knowledge and a common culture to each other, and it makes us Americans, frankly. Just like if you were in any other country, your cultural heritage, your education would do that as well. I learned something last night. I doing a little surfing, and I found a website called The American Thinker. And one of the articles was from a gentleman by the name of Bruce Price, Bruce Deltrick Price, and it's called Killing Knowledge in K-12. And it was a fascinating read, because we've been talking about things like Common Core, the fact that children are not being educated in the same way that we were. You know, if you're 30, I guess, or maybe 40 and above at this point, you know how to write cursive. You know the American history. You know major events and dates. That's not being taught really anymore. I mean, this is an all-out assault on the fabric of our society, the things that hold us together. And it shouldn't just be YouTube, and it shouldn't just be whatever the new pop culture icon is of the moment. There has to be some historical fact basis, I believe, to help us really hold together a society. And anybody coming in should actually want to be part of that society, to immerse themselves in it. If I move to another country, I'd want to learn to speak their language. I'm moving there because I like their culture. I want to immerse myself in it. That's not what's going on anymore. The American culture is being denigrated. It's being dismantled, and people who are coming into the country are bringing whatever their mores and their norms are, and they're not ours. And there's nothing wrong with saying that. It's a fact. And if we really want to stay together as a country and progress, we need to respect the fact that people coming in need to actually understand what it is to be American. And the culture and norms here need to be respected, not pushed aside. And for those who think that progressivism is all about acceptance and you know, it's not even about letting people live and let live. It's not even that anymore. It's do it my way or there's something wrong with you. You're violating my safe space. You're triggering me. You are racist, sexist, whatever the ist they want to put on it. It still has the same effect in their minds of shutting you down. That's not American. If you have a disagreement or a difference of opinion, it's about debate. And I'm all for debate. You can, and it's about live and let live, really live and let live, not you superimposing your lifestyle, your beliefs, your tendencies, whatever they are, on me. As long as you're not hurting somebody or actively taking away their liberty, then okay. You know, as long as it's, you know, you're not messing with children and so seniors or animals, it's okay, right? So where are we coming to? How do we get to this point? This article was really very telling in that this is a social agenda. This is not just coming out of nowhere. This has been a process that's happened since John Dewey really changed the paradigm of what is taught in public school system. And let me read the first paragraph of it, because I think it's very interesting. The first schools, the first great universities, were focused on knowledge, figuring out what it is, collecting and verifying it, and passing it on from teachers to students. And that goes on in any education process, medicine, law, the teaching profession, whatever it is. That knowledge base was passed from the person who had it to the next generation. That's what medicine's about. That's part of the Hippocratic Oath, is to teach your fellow doctors, the students, what you learned. And hopefully you keep learning as you go along in your career. But it's all about sharing that knowledge, not about hiding it. So his next paragraph, our K-12 schools have drifted far from this ideal. Knowledge itself is disparaged. The transmission of knowledge is sneered at. These shifts are huge and destructive, and they are by design. And I think that really comes into play with Common Core. We talk about it, but what is it really? I mean, is it... It's not about... I mean, they say it's about free thought, I guess. I mean, because if 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4 anymore, and you can make up the answer, as long as you can answer why you came to that conclusion, then you're right. You know, that you can't make something fuzzy out of something that's concrete. But that's the point, apparently. The point is to muddy the waters, to make it as incongruent as possible and confuse people. And when you do that, critical thinking goes out the window. The fact that you don't have any handle to hang knowledge base on, then it's fluid. Nothing really matters. Apparently, they don't really teach anymore, you know, from a standpoint of an orderly progression, what facts happen at what date. So people can't tell you when the revolution really was, or, you know, who, I mean, I guess there's no question now why people can't tell you who the president is, who's in Congress, how many people in Congress, no civics at all. And they're just taught buzzwords. You know, the founding fathers are racist. Our country is a racist country. You name it, whatever the simplistic mindset and meme is, people just parrot that. They don't even think about it. But the sad part is they don't want to think about it. And that mindset now, I think, it really comes home to me about this whole election process and the political system, that people have just ceded their authority, their common sense, their critical thinking on what's being fed to them by the media and by the various politicians out there. And it's sad. And it's so unnecessary, because if people actually do their own due diligence, get off of the TV, get off of the standard internet websites, and start doing some deep searching, it's amazing what you find out and how hypocritical a lot of these people have been. And they tell you they stand for X, but they really don't. And you follow the money and you follow these trails back. It's like going down a rabbit hole of, for example, Soros, who's a huge political progressive money infuser, has given money to John Kasich, who is a Republican. They supposedly stand on two opposite ends of the coin, but he's giving him money. And it's all very cynical, just to keep him in the race so that he can be a spoiler, so this can go to a contested convention. You know, I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian. I think everybody should be up in arms about choices of us as voters, the choices that we make, being completely eradicated, completely just destroyed by people who, quote, know better than we do. They don't know better. What they want to do is protect their turf. I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican. The major parties are all about staying in power. But the good part is that I think those of us who are awake and paying attention, we know it. There's no question as to what motives are anymore. The motives are to keep the same ship going in the same direction with maybe a different color code on it, whether it's a Republican or Democrat. I personally believe it's two sides of the same coin. We've gotten bigger government. We've gotten more government intrusion. We've gotten more taxes. We've gotten open borders, for example. We've gotten funding for Common Core. You know, again, here's another example of somebody saying that they are for something, but their votes don't fit the bill. We have Ted Cruz, for example, and I'm not for or any political candidate. This is just facts. He votes for TPP, which is a Trans-Pacific Partnership. That is a destruction of our Constitution, where the UN and various foreign entities get to decide our trading. And they're going to make buku bucks off of us, and they're going to be able to flood our shores with their workers, and they're going to take the money off out of the country, and we're going to be left holding the bag. That's how this works. You know, it's a destruction of sovereignty. That's a problem. For someone who's a constitutionalist, I would think he'd have a problem with that. The other thing that he did is he voted for having government money be given to people who homeschool their children. Again, once you take the government handout, you're beholden to them. So Common Core now pervades the homeschool system, homeschooling system across the country, because of the fact that the government is now in bed with it, or is giving money. That's the worst thing that could actually happen. Every time the government puts a foot in something, they take it over. And unfortunately, it seems to me that they're not working for us as Americans, as individuals anymore. It's all about helping. It's the bigger picture is staying in power and helping the people that got you there. I don't have deep pockets. I'm not giving millions of dollars to any candidate, but a corporation certainly can. And we talked about it at length on the show about the healthcare system and the fact that they were in on writing this bill. And everybody got a handout. Health savings accounts can only be used for buying brand name prescription drugs, for example. Or the fact that health savings accounts, and I don't know if it proceeded, but it certainly didn't change. Health savings accounts monies can only be administered by the insurance company. So if you have a health savings account and you have a commercial insurance and they deny the service, you cannot use your health savings account to get the service. That's really ridiculous. It's your money, but somebody is controlling it from stem to stern. And that's, you know, take a step back, let the emotion go, stop practicing identity politics, and think about whether it really serves your interest individually as a family. And if it doesn't, you really need to take a look at it. Identity politics is a tool. It's designed to divide and conquer. And when you identify with a group, it may not be in your interest to do that. You're a small business owner, you may not be, and you're an entrepreneur, you may not want to identify with the progressive mentality of, you know, you didn't earn it, you didn't work for it, so you need to give it away. You took it from somebody else. They're not the ones spending 90 hours, 100 hours a week, you know, staying until 10 o'clock at night, making payroll, but they think that you're a bad person because you worked hard and you got ahead. That's the mentality that we're dealing with. And just because you may be part of an ethnic group that supposedly historically is not part of the norm or the inside, so what? You're a business person. I would think that you'd want the tax structure in your favor, excellent workers who can speak your language and really be part of the American fabric. All those things come into play of running a business. I mean, ultimately, we need to be more mature, I think, more sophisticated. They think we're stupid, and they treat us accordingly. And I think it's time that people start saying we're not going to take it. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, one of the things, again, that I want to really harp on is the fact that we need to take personal responsibility for our choices. This show is about healthcare, so we're going to talk about what you need to do to navigate this convoluted system that really is designed to, I believe, work against you. Just have you pay a premium, never see a physician, or get the bare minimum. And when you really need the system, they're going to actually start shuttling you to hospice and palliative care, anything to lessen the cost of your access to the system. It's all about money. It's all centralized at this point, where they're trying to remove competition. We see it with hospitals. We see it with doctor's offices that are practices being bought out and going out of business, essentially becoming satellites of the hospitals. And we see it with the commercial insurance industry. There were dozens. We're now down to five. And the smaller we get, the less choice we get, the more expensive the system is. And unfortunately, it becomes more unwieldy, and it also becomes less innovation. Nobody's going to want to spend a lot of money on an experimental treatment because they're not going to get reimbursed for it. The doctors who are out or are independent have stopped doing all the procedures or all the are seeing patients outside of their particular niche because it's not cost effective to do that. So the knowledge base is shrinking, the access is shrinking. And I think the ultimate goal, as I said before, is Medicare for all. Under Affordable Care Act, though, it's actually Medicaid for all. That's even worse from a doctor's perspective and a patient perspective. But a lot of things about Medicare is kind of nebulous. I think unless you're in it, you really don't know what it's all about. And even when you do take or you do have Medicare, I'm not sure a lot of Medicare seniors or anybody who has it really knows how to navigate this system. And Medicare is probably one of the most onerous things for a doctor, a type of insurance for a doctor to take. The rules change constantly. The government is completely controlling it on all levels. And there's a lot of mistakes that get made in this system. So I wanted to bring a guest on who could give us an inside view of how a senior or anybody on Medicare or commercial insurance for that matter can be savvy, take the lead. When you get these crazy bills, you don't really have to pay them all the time. There are a lot of errors that go on. And if you don't know where to look or how to start the process, a lot of times you end up being victimized. And there's no way, no reason really to ruin your credit or have your anxiety level go through the roof without having some ammunition. So I wanted to welcome Mr. Woodrow Wilcox. He's a senior medical bill caseworker at Senior Care Insurance Services in Maryville, in Indiana. And I met him at a book signing a few weeks ago, and I was fascinated with what he does because he's the person, and his business is the business that is the go-between between the patient and the doctor, the hospital. And they've saved people hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars at this point. And I just wanted him to come on and give us the inside baseball on how people can really help themselves. Thank you, Mr. Wilcox, for coming on today.
I'm very honored that you wanted me on your program today, Dr. George. And it was a pleasure meeting you in Washington a few weeks ago. And I'm very inspired by your book, too. I hope that people know that you wrote a book and that they will ask you about that and get your book, too, because I think you and I are on the same wavelength, but we come at it from different angles.
Uh-huh.
You come at it from the perspective of a doctor trying to help people. I come at it from a perspective of an administrator in a major insurance agency that tries to protect our senior citizens from errors and fraud in the Medicare system. And as you mentioned, in the first 7.5 years that I did this, I was able to save the clients of our agency over $1 million by fighting the errors and fraud in the Medicare system.
You know, excuse me, got a cold. But we hear about fraud and abuse all the time on Capitol Hill. Is it from your experience, is it coming from the doctors? Is it coming from the hospitals? Is it just poor management on Medicare? What's the most common reason that fraud occurs?
Fraud by doctors is most doctors, no, they don't commit fraud. They may make mistakes. And when I bring a mistake to the attention of a doctor or a doctor's office, I'm gentle about it. I mean, you can make a mistake. I can make a mistake. We can have a bad day. We can be distracted by somebody. I never get upset when the doctor's office makes a mistake. But if it seems like they don't want to correct the mistake, take responsibility for that mistake and correct it, then I will get a little upset with them. But the most common cause of the problems with Medicare and the medical bills is the fact that the government contractors that handle the communication between Medicare and the insurance companies and Medicare and the hospitals and Medicare and the doctors, their system is not as foolproof as they lead you to believe. The breakdown happens perhaps hundreds of times per day and for a few seconds. And when those few seconds or split seconds, or when the communications on the internet or by satellite are interrupted, thousands of bits of information are lost. And the most common reason for our senior citizens to have problems with their Medicare-related medical bill is that the Medicare, number one, on a technical basis, they don't deliver the information to the insurance company so that the insurance company knows there's a claim and then pays it. Instead, the doctor or the hospital, they don't get their money that they're supposed to get, the last 20%, and so they hit the patient with the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our clients send me what they have, the bill and so forth like that, and then I collect other information like the Medicare summary notice or perhaps the insurance company's explanation of benefits. I check with the insurance company. And the most common thing is that the insurance company did not get the information because the Medicare system technically itself breaks down every single day multiple times. But there are doctors that do commit fraud. In fact, in 2005, I wrote about a doctor in Chicago who murdered one of his patients because he had committed Medicare fraud. And because she was going to testify against him that she never got certain services that his filings said she got. And in order to keep her silent, he murdered her and was convicted in federal court of both murder and of the Medicare fraud. If you recall, back in right after the election of 2012, a doctor in Florida was charged with Medicare fraud, but the federal accusers did not bring the indictment against him until after the election because he happened to be a doctor who had given $450,000 to the Obama campaign, and they didn't want to let the public know about that until after the election. So there's all kinds of political play. There's all kinds of corruption. In fact, I even wrote an article that said that the Medicare system is designed to promote corruption and fraud. And that is because one of our clients got a bill, and it said it was from a certain hospital, in Jackson County, but that the address was in Crown Point, Indiana. Well, Jackson, Crown Point, Indiana is not in Jackson County. I knew where what the hospital was because I go there for family reunions. And so I immediately saw that this was a fraudulent filing, and I reported it. And I'll tell you what, when I do report fraud, what I think is fraud or wrong, bad business practices, I get better response from the Attorney General's Office of Consumer Protection than I get, I'm talking about the State Attorney General of Indiana, his Office of Consumer Protection. It responds quicker, faster, and more meaningfully than the Medicare Inspector General.
You know, I read that article that you referenced, and in it you said she hung up in your face, the person you were trying to make the fraud claim to. I mean, that's talk about unresponsive, and they're supposed to be minders of our money. And they spend all of this effort on the doctor side, you know, decreasing our reimbursements, demonizing us, and their system waste. How much waste do you think that from the Medicare side, you know, and all these electronic drops and all that, how much money is it wasted in that, do you think?
I have no idea because I'm not all over the country, but I will tell you this. I did calculations a few years ago to figure out, well, how much money am I saving our clients and what percentage of the market do we have in our area and how much of the market do we have in our congressional district? And then I multiplied, so I figured out what should be all the Medicare billing problems for the senior citizens in our congressional district, and then I simply multiplied that by the number of congressional districts, and I came up with the figure that every year senior citizens are being wrongfully billed over $1 billion a year.
Wow.
And that motivated me to write the book to try to teach other people what I do to protect our insurance agency's clients. And we are a big insurance agency. We're one of the biggest insurance agencies in the Midwest from Ohio to the Dakotas. We are one of the biggest. We're just outside of Chicago in Northwest Indiana, and we have thousands of clients. And right now I have 3 file cabinets full of past cases. And I've got active at least 50 files at any one time where I'm working on things. And I've sent you some of my more recent articles where you can see the progression where I write something in December, and then we get a response in early March after I wrote the first letter in December, and then we had a final resolution in March. So I do my best to stay on top of things when one of our clients brings a problem. The senior citizens are not stupid, but their hearing is not as good, and their eyesight is not as good, and the forms are confusing. And because I kind of speak and read insurance-ese, I have an easier time at it. And I just simply step in and try to, I'm kind of like a guard dog for our clients' wallets. I tell them if the bill is correct, I tell them the bill is correct. And I'll tell them why if they don't understand.
Uh-huh.
But many times it is that they didn't do anything wrong. And they shouldn't be punished financially because somebody else in the Medicare system made a mistake or committed a fraud. And I just simply try to protect them from that.
I think you gave another example in some of the articles that I read, something as simple as the doctor's office not sending the claim to Medicare and then sticking
That's
the
right.
patient with the bill. That's, I mean,
That's right.
amazing. That's unheard of, really. You know, why would you not send a claim at all? Or,
well,
you know, sometimes you send them and they bounce back. No one's following up. Who knows? But that's a big deal, too, isn't it?
That's right. Well, in one case, I had a client from Hobart, Indiana that came to my office and she brought a letter from an attorney demanding $2,600 from her for an MRI that she had a few years before. And I called the attorney and I said, you know, I just got this and I think I'm experienced with Medicare claims and I think there's something wrong with it. Give me 40 days to research this and I'll report to you what I find. Is that fair? And he said, well, that's fine. Go ahead. Well, in 3 days I had the answer. And the answer was that the woman had gone to get an MRI and the firm that owned the MRI facility sold that facility a week later to another firm. And neither the first firm nor the second firm had ever bothered to file with Medicare the claim for the MRI service. And over 15 months had passed. It was past the time for filing with Medicare. And so I contacted the attorney. I told him what the facts of the case were. And I said, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I think that if they were contracted to follow Medicare rules and they did not follow Medicare rules and the time has passed for them to file the claim, I think you don't have a case. And he said, I'll check what you are telling me. If it's true, we won't file a lawsuit against the woman and the whole thing will be behind her.
Wow.
And he checked. I was correct. And he contacted us with a letter saying, we will not be pursuing this.
That's amazing.
Well, I saved that client $2,600 plus attorney's fees plus court costs.
Yeah, and anxiety and heart problems probably as well. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're having a really important conversation with Mr. Woodrow Wilcox. He's author of the book Solving Medical Problems, and you can go to his website. I think it's solvingmedicalproblems.com. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I wanted to talk a bit about Obamacare and the new rule that came into effect, which I don't think I've talked about it maybe about a year ago, but I need to revisit it. The fact that they changed the designation when you get admitted to the hospital, inpatient versus observation versus ambulatory. Talk to people about that, because people need to be on point if they ever get admitted and find out under what status they're admitted under. Why would that be important for them?
Yes, I tell you what. From the very beginning that Obama took office, his administration has been waging war against seniors, because it was the Attorney General, Eric Holder, who in the summer of 2009, his first year in office, changed the legal definitions of when a patient is an inpatient, hospital inpatient or outpatient. And the difference for seniors is that when you're an inpatient, you're under Medicare Part A, which does help you with the medicines that you take while you're in the hospital. When you're legally defined as an outpatient but in a hospital, you don't get any help with those medicines. And that raised the issue of self-administered drugs. And so federal government will not help you pay for self-administered drugs. And these definitions are definitions that the hospitals and doctors have no control over. They have to use those definitions. They have to go by those definitions, or Medicare won't pay them anything. So they do that. Now, for our clients that get those big bills, sometimes they have a Medicare Part D that will help them pay part of it, but the process for filing with the Medicare Part D is very onerous. And what I suggest, you have to first pay the bill to the hospital for the self-administered drugs. Then you have to file with the Medicare Part D insurance company, the papers and the receipts. Then they will say, well, you bought these out of network, and so we're not going to help you pay the entire bill, but we'll pay our part as if you had bought in network. So the whole thing is convoluted, and it is basically against senior citizens and four big pharmaceutical companies. Now, in 2010, the Wall Street Journal published an article about how they discovered that Barack Obama had made a backroom deal with major pharmaceutical companies to insert certain language and clauses in the Obamacare law in order to help enrich them. And that was in the Wall Street Journal. Well, I wrote an article exposing that he was a backroom deal president helping the pharmaceutical companies and stabbing senior citizens and everybody else in America in the back. And that is at my other website, ObamacareHurtsSeniors.com, ObamacareHurtsSeniors.com. You will learn many ways in which Obamacare hurts seniors at ObamacareHurtsSeniors.com. And you are quite right about this. The Obamacare law itself is a major insult to senior citizens and other people. It was not designed to help people to get better health care or more health care. It was designed to give command and control, more command and control to the federal government at the expense of every individual in America.
I couldn't agree more. And with the overlay of it's all about everybody being covered, if you're against it, you're against poor people, you want them to die. And it's actually doing that. It's like this neurolinguistic thing where they say one thing and the effect is the absolute opposite. You can't keep your doctor.
Yes.
You can't afford to go see it. I mean, sick, isn't it?
You are quite right about Medicaid. Now, I do not have experience in Medicaid, but a think tank in Washington, D.C. was they were reading my articles, and they knew I must be a pretty good writer and probably a good editor, and they sent to me a research paper about the faults of Medicaid. And they asked me to edit it. So I edited a research paper about Medicaid as simply a gift, a contribution to a think tank in Washington, D.C. And I learned a great deal about the problems of Medicaid, but I am not an expert in it. But I can tell you that Dr. George is absolutely correct that Medicaid is not designed to help poor people. It's designed to give command and control to the federal government at the expense of both doctors and poor people.
I absolutely agree, and I can give you some examples. I mean, I've worked in the clinic system, and I've seen the Medicaid children come in on a boatload of psychotropic drugs. They've got every ADD, ADHD diagnosis you can name, and they pay for that. But if I want to write them a prescription for an acid or an antibiotic that really will work based on culture results, it's not covered. So, I mean, I think this is, again, can be used as a command and control social engineering mechanism to do whatever the government wants to do to you. And we're stuck. Well, they want us to feel like we're stuck in it. And ultimately, for everybody, knowledge is power. So actually, I have a question for you. If you're a senior, what are the steps you need to do that you'd recommend so that you don't put yourself at risk of being billed inappropriately or not getting something pre-certified, then having it be out of network? What do you tell seniors that they can start doing so they can get a wall going before they get hurt?
Well, let me tell you this. I recommend to seniors this. You know, your eyesight probably is not as good as it used to be, and the hearing is not as good as it used to be. So you basically are relying on other people to help you anyway. Why not take it a step this way? When you contact an insurance agent or agency that sells Medicare Supplement Insurance or Medicare Advantage Insurance or Medicare Part D Insurance, ask that insurance agency. And if I believe that there is a problem with my medical bill, can I bring the papers to you and have you research it and tell me if there is or is not? Because those people speak insurance-ese much better than you do, and they're probably more familiar with the forms than you are. Now, in my articles, I end the articles that say, all the help that I gave this client was free of charge. This insurance agency distinguishes itself by going the extra mile for our senior citizen clients. If your insurance agency does not do the same, ask them why they don't. Okay? And so I make the point, we're a special insurance agency. We go the extra mile to protect our senior citizen clients. But also for senior citizens, if you have a grandchild who's in college or high school age or thereabouts, get the book, my book, Solving Medicare Problems, and have them read it. And maybe even get together with them and have them read it to you and understand the system, but also the youngster, make the youngster feel like a hero for helping grandma or grandpa to fight Medicare billing fraud or error to protect grandma and grandpa, because grandma and grandpa have shown that youngster that they love them. Give the youngster a chance to show that they love their grandparent and care for their grandparent, and make them feel special, make them feel like a hero by involving them in that process, because they're going to be more concerned about making sure grandma and grandpa are treated correctly. And the insurance, a smart insurance agency, will be very concerned about their senior citizen clients, wanting them not to pay one dime more than legally required.
That sounds like a good plan to me. It's about taking your power back. I mean, I think the system works by ignorance. You know, they think we can get whatever we want. No one's going to read the fine print. Nobody's going to fight us. They're just going to get along and do it. And once the squeaky wheel gets whatever. I forget what the analogy is. But if you get in there and you start making noise, the system changes. I mean, ultimately, it's on us to stop taking it, don't you think?
Yes. But I also think that, you're right. There's plenty of doublespeak in politics. And I've said a lot of bad things about Obama, but let me say that one party or the other party is not going to be the savior of the country, because there are scoundrels in both parties who use doublespeak. And so I came from an unusual family. My father was a Republican from a family of Democrats. My mother was a Democrat from a family of Republicans. So I learned about political diplomacy at a very tender age. And so I just simply grew up with the idea the brands, the labels don't matter. It's the substance that matters. And that's what I look for. And so, people around here think of me as a very unusual person, but I can do that. I can make friends with anybody who wants to treat people right, and I can be the enemy of anyone who wants to treat people wrong.
I think that's the way everybody should think. It's called critical thinking and not groupthink. And that's what makes you so powerful, because it is about what they do, not what they say. They say things all the time to get us to turn our brains off and just think as, tribal thinking. They said this, I need to get up in arms against it because I'm part of this group. That's where they get you. Ultimately,
right.
You described beautifully in a lot of these articles about how the seniors were gouged from the get-go. They took over $700 billion out of the Medicare pot to help fund Obamacare. That came from patient care, didn't it?
That's right. Not only that, but I'll tell you where most of that cut. It was $716 billion. I didn't make up the figure. It came from the Government Accounting Office, which was released in July 2012. And that most of that gouging came from Medicare Advantage, where they don't fund the Medicare Advantage. There are other things, like they don't fund the medicine when you're in an outpatient in a hospital. But most of it came to the Medicare Advantage. We have clients who were very happy with their Medicare Advantage plan before Obamacare, but then when they went in the hospital after Obamacare was enacted and in law. They came out of the hospital with owing thousands of dollars because the Medicare Advantage was no longer funded as it had been before Obamacare. And they were surprised, and I was surprised that it happened so fast and so heavily. But I explained to them, I and our insurance agency, we don't have any control over the rules. All we do is try to be familiar enough with the rules that we can help our clients get the most for their money. That's all we can do. We don't make the rules.
Well, on that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking to the author of Solving Medical Problems, Mr. Woodrow Wilcox. And, before the break, you were talking about how the government sapped Medicare Advantage. But when I remember the players around the table who helped craft this law, there was another freebie that went to AARP, because I knew that they were all hot to become the supplemental insurance to take up the slack for what Medicare Advantage would lose. So, everybody had some sort of angle in this, and there were no doctors, practicing physicians, no patients in that room. And we're the ones who it should be working for, and it works against us.
Right. I kept saying, writing articles and publicly speaking, that before you try to change the healthcare system and make it like a giant Medicare system, why not fix the problems with Medicare first before you try to do that? And I was ignored.
Well, if you had your way and they weren't listening to you, what changes would you make in Medicare to make it run properly? Because that's key. We're all going to be on it at one point. I want it to be there when I get there. What would you do if you had the ultimate power?
You don't have a program long enough for that conversation. But I would say, first place, I know a lot of things, and I'm a pretty smart guy, but I don't know everything, and I'm humble enough to admit that. You are a very smart woman. You are a very smart doctor, but you don't know everything, and you're smart enough to admit that. The Obamacare law was put together by special interest to protect those special interests and give them more profit and more power. I would open up the conversation to many smart people and not close it and make it so it's only the special interest. But I have ideas. I'm sure you have ideas. And if you and I and people like us who really are concerned about health care and people would get together, we would come up with something much better than Obamacare.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's a value. We've been devalued as doctors and patients as well. You're now become a cost center. And if you're costing the system too much, they're going to deny you care because it's all about making the system richer. It's not about healthcare anymore. It's about money. And why they say that doctors only care about money, it's actually the system that cares about money. So they're trying to squeeze both ends. They push patients in with the mandate. They push doctors in by making them employees of hospitals and losing their autonomy and their Hippocratic oath as an underlying principle. And ultimately, you're absolutely right. Hospitals got richer. Pharmaceutical companies got richer. AARP is huge. It's just, we fell into the trap based on we care about you. We want to take care of you. That's the kiss of death, in my opinion.
You know, there's the process here of who is the middleman in the communication process. There's the public, there's the speaker, and then there's the publisher, the communicator. A lot of news organizations are controlled by major corporations that have a special interest in selling medical equipment or selling medicine and making a profit at it. And like, for instance, NBC, CNBC, and MSNBC are at various points in time owned, controlled, or have a major interest in by General Electric. And Westinghouse was the owner of CBS many years ago, and then CBS was spun off with Viacom as the owner and so forth like that. But there's still a friendly old friend network between Westinghouse and CBS and the sister companies. And these companies will not publish information that might be harmful to the financial interests of their parent corporations and their investors. And you need to realize this, that with many of these news organizations, major news organizations, their parent companies or their investors have a major interest in selling equipment or in getting the government to issue bonds that they can buy the bonds and make interest free of income taxes and so forth like that. So you have these major interests controlling the go-between informer, the news media, mm-hmm. and that is what is basically misleading many people in the public because they think they're getting the news. They're not getting the news. They're getting a version of the news that protects the special interests that have money to be made with the Obamacare or whatever else is being pushed at that time.
That's, you just distilled it down. It's about follow the money. And that's where you have to break away. Before you came on the air, we were talking about doing your own due diligence, going and looking at the connections, not just from these, the big mainstream media, because you're right, it is tainted. How many drug commercials do you see running during the news, at 6 p.m. and 11 and so on? They're not going to talk about alternative treatments. They're not going to be, an advocate for the patient, because their paychecks are coming from the corporate interests. And we need to be more savvy, more sophisticated. This is business. It's not that they love you. They want to take care of you. They don't. They want you to, technically, I'm going to be honest, have a chronic medical problem, get a medication every day, and then when you really need them, because you have something severe, they're going to put you in palliative care. Get as much money as they can from you on your way out the door.
That's right. That's right. You're absolutely right. And I wish there were more people like you and me speaking out. Apparently, it's just you and me and maybe a few others who are knowledgeable about this and care enough about it and care about people that we do speak out, even though we get a hefty amount of criticism and shunning, don't we?
Well, maybe I'm in a little bit of a bubble. I don't get any of that, and even if I did, I don't care. I'm telling the truth. I care about what I do, just like you do. I love medicine. I love helping people, and I take offense, I'm sure you do too, to interest encroaching on that, demonizing the truth, and trying to make a buck off of everybody. I think it's wrong. And I think more people now are coming around to what we think, though. They're paying so much money out of pocket. The Medicare individuals are paying much more money than they ever did before, are they not?
Yep.
And
it seems like, with my insurance, the premiums went up and the coverage went down.
That's it in a nutshell. They call it value-based. That's what they try to call it. What it is rationing. So either they're rationing your care because they won't cover a service, or you self-ration because your out-of-pocket is so high, you don't use it. That's really why the healthcare costs, technically, have come down. It's not because they're so efficient. We just described in what you just told me, they're totally not efficient. They're ridiculous. And if they would fix their part, I bet you there'd be a lot more money left over to give quality care, pay physicians a reasonable sum of money, and not just try to lower the price. It's like limbo. How low can you go? But ultimately, there's a floor that you reach where you're not giving healthcare anymore. You're just taking money from people. I think we're kind of at that point.
Yes. And a matter of fact, in the research paper that I edited concerning Medicaid, one of the problems was that the bureaucrats running Medicaid always wanted the doctors to lower their price, but the bureaucrats running Medicaid never wanted to take a pay cut themselves.
No, it's actually got shifted to them. They took the money from doctors who are performing the service, and it's all administrative fees. Only 7 cents of the healthcare dollar is being paid to the doctor. The rest goes to administration and the rest of the corporate infrastructure for healthcare. People should be really kind of pissed about that. But ultimately, all they care about is, oh, my doctor's gouging me. They need to be at my beck and call. Medicine is a right, not a privilege. And I'm not going to be someone's indentured servant where you get to decide what my care is. Never going to happen. And I'm telling you, if that happens, they'll lose so many doctors who actually want to practice medicine. It'll be a point of no return. So how can my listeners reach you?
Have them call you, and then you give them my number if they really want to reach me. But the thing is that the most important thing is that they learn how to help senior citizens in their area. As a matter of fact, I wrote the book with the idea that a lot of churches around the country would have a team put together, an insurance agent, a lawyer, an accountant, and a pastor or ministerial person work together to help the senior citizens in their church and in the neighborhood as an outreach ministry of the church to help senior citizens. I thought that the book would be a guideline, a map for those people to work together to help senior citizens. First of all, if your senior citizens in the church need this kind of help and you give it to them, they're going to appreciate the church more and the money that they save because somebody helped them fight the fraud and the Medicare mistakes in Medicare. They're going to have more money, and they're going to appreciate the church. You're going to get some of that money just because of the appreciation. And, of course, the outreach ministry that you can do by getting the book and putting together a team at the church to actually help the senior citizens in your church and in your community. That's really my idea behind the book.
Okay.
And I thought that especially insurance agents might want to copy what our agency has done by actually going to bat for their clients, because...
Hey, Mr. Wilcox, I got to cut you off, but I got to have you come back. Thank you for your time today. I will tweet out your information, and I definitely want to have you back on as a guest. Thank you for listening to Medicine on Call.